Welcome to Compromising Positions. I'm Leanne Potter, cyber anthropologist and head of security operations for a major retailer.
And I'm Jeff Watkins, a cybersecurity enthusiast and CTO for a major tech consultancy. Together, we're the tech podcast that asks non-cybersecurity professionals what we in the industry can do to make their lives easier.
And help make our organisations more prepared to face ever-changing human-centric cyber threats. In this episode, we're joined by Amy Kupas, a Scrum Master, D&I lead and founder of a women's health and wellbeing group at Sky.
We're going to talk about all things Agile and Scrum. Most organisations have some form of Agile methodologies, and the likelihood is yours does too.
But what is it? What is Kanban? What is Scrum? What does a Scrum Master do? And why are they always sprinting? Amy's going to help us answer these questions and more in this episode, Fun with Purpose, a Scrum Guide.
Yeah, this is a good one, listeners. Today you're going to learn that Scrum not only injects agility and empowerment into the proceedings, but also fun and creativity. And best of all, there are even things that the cyber team can follow along with. We love this chat and think you will do too. So sit back and enjoy our interview with Amy Kupas.
Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So Amy, tell us more about yourself.
Well, I'm a fur mum, if you can say that. So I've got my lovely German Shepherd, Bella, and my two cats, Pip and Merlin. I live in the countryside. So love going out in nature, love woodlands, going for walks, hikes. I think I would describe myself as a bit of a goof, but something that I bring into what I do at work in terms of like having fun with purpose. Definitely like my team and people who know me, kind of that's kind of my vibe. I say fab a lot. Wellbeing's really important to me, something like a personal journey going on, like, you know, just improving my well-being, work-life balance is something that I want, you know, to share with other people, but that's a journey that I'm definitely going on myself. So yeah, a little bit about me.
Oh, very nice. And so what does the day job look like for you?
Day job of a Scrum Master, well, it's varied. There's things that I do within my team which we call squads, or something that I definitely like to call squads. It's just more of a in it together kind of feeling, I think, squad. And then there's stuff that I do outside of the role, but inside, day in the life of a Scrum Master, we are a coach, a mentor for those in the team. We have a mixture of like developers, testers, automation testers, business analysts, POs. There's that, well, I know the Scrum Guide says you're accountable for establishing Scrum, but I think it's more the, for me, yeah, you've got these cool frameworks and obviously they're there as a guide, but it's kind of making processes and people and basically the whole squad. So being that guide and mentor, there's things that you start to facilitate in your inner team squad, and then the things that you want the squad members to kind of pick up and be self-autonomous and self-organized eventually for you to kind of step back. I know there's that phrase that people say, being a Scrum Master, your kind of goal is to be out of a job in a way. I think for me, it has, yeah, we have a mixture of like Scrum Kanban, we're a bit of Scrum Ban in my squad, events that I help run, workshops that we guide our squad members to either think about improvements to journeys, applications, but even their own self-development as well. I think sometimes we can forget about that and it's just about, I suppose, the big projects, but it's actually, for me, there's a big focus on making sure the people in my squad are developed and they're empowered and they're, you know, they feel creative in their day-to-day role. Fun with purpose is kind of like my motto that I want to get them to feel inspired to inspire others. It's like lifting others. So that's, yeah, a variety of kind of a day in the life of a Scrum Master. You're involved in deliveries, to workshops, to catching up with the people in your team, to even like inspiring and championing initiatives outside of your squad as well, because I think sometimes there's that, I suppose, tendency to think about only what you could do in your squad, but it's obviously a big thing as a Scrum Master, I think, to promote and try to implement change outwards as well. And you can always, no matter what, your squad will always benefit from that, which will probably lead me onto a tangent about, I know for myself at the beginning, I used to feel, I suppose you have that guilt for stepping away from your squad when you're doing something else, but really, you know, it will help your experience. It will help things that you bring back to them to coach and mentor with. So sometimes as a Scrum Master, you're kind of wearing different hats, and it's kind of making sure you don't feel any guilt from stepping away or doing something different, because it all kind of comes back together really on what you do as a Scrum Master.
Oh, amazing. And I think for the benefits of our listeners, like, cybersecurity traditionally doesn't kind of follow agile frameworks, doesn't follow sort of Scrum or anything like that. And so from an outsider looking in at the way Scrum teams are formed and things, a lot of cybersecurity teams kind of struggle to understand what that is. Could you go into a little bit of detail of how Scrum teams are formed, about any of the ceremonies they do, and what's the benefit of working in that way? And also, is there a difference between Scrum and Agile? And you mentioned Kanban there. If you could go into sort of the concepts there for our audience.
So yeah, Agile is a methodology, and within that methodology, you have frameworks such as Scrum and Kanban. So Scrum is basically using empirical processes. It's things that you observe and experiment with. It's all using what you see, your experiences, and bringing that back. And then Kanban, it's more of a way of visualizing work. So you have WIP limits, for example, on a Kanban Jira board that people might be aware of. And it's all about maximizing efficiency. I did mention Scrumban. Some people might say, oh, that's a bit naughty to say that, but it's kind of like a mixture. I know a few teams, squads might have that kind of concept. So for me, it's the Scrum events. So we have events such as, well, because we're Scrum Ban, instead of a sprint, I say cycle. So you'd have the sprint itself in Scrum, and then you'd have planning, and then the Scrum or stand up. However, where you wish to say it. I know there's been, I suppose, articles, documentation around how some people don't say stand up because it's not inclusive of, I suppose, those who can't stand up. So that's why it's like a daily scrum. And then you have a sprint review. I call it a cycle review. And then you have a retrospective. So the cycle, the sprint is obviously that period of time that the squad is working on work. It's an iteration, normally 2 weeks. Planning, it obviously happens before the squad, the actual sprint or cycle. In my squad, I know we do a variation, but I can come on to that. And then stand up or daily scrum is basically a check-in, which isn't for scrum masters to completely own. Obviously, when you come into a team, you may, like I did myself, facilitate it for a while. But a thing that I think is really beneficial is to get others to do it. It's one of the user-friendly, easiest kind of events that you can share and get people to grow in confidence. So we spin a wheel and everybody has a go. And then you have a review, so review of that 2 week, the work you've done, demos to POs, stakeholders, whoever is relevant to what your squad or team does, and then a retrospective, basically a reflection, not just on the work, but it's more so on how the people in your squad feel. Their reflections. For me, kind of like the manifesto, it's individuals and interactions over processes and tools. That's a big thing. You know, we're very, you know, a lot of companies very deadline driven, but we need to always remember it's about the people who are working, and I suppose they're not robots churning out work. It's very much about the people, making sure that they feel valued and happy in what they do. I said about planning in terms of, in my team we do it a bit differently, so because we basically know our priorities. Obviously there's all different planning you do, different, you know, people say, you know, PI planning, quarterly planning, yes, of course that happens, but we basically, I kind of call it a temperature check. So we look at what are the priorities, what are our goals from the product side, what are the goals from the tech side, what do we think we need to do to achieve this, what's some innovation stuff that we want to do, what are our, you know, looking at retro actions and things that we discussed, and kind of that's our kind of quick check, rather than saying this the typical planning. Of course we do like backlog reviews, tech and product, and we have a good, try to maintain a healthy backlog. That's always something that you need to improve, though. It's never perfect. And then retrospectives, which is definitely something that I'm known for. I love a good theme for a retro. And I love bringing props and stuff in and getting basically the guys to just have a little bit of fun, especially the warm up. And just, it's the time they work so hard just to have that bit of fun. And obviously if there's a hybrid element to it, because we don't have a squad that's fully in the local area. So it's always a hybrid element. And I don't personally mind that. And yeah, sometimes on a retro you have to, a theme maybe isn't always appropriate, you kind of have to dial it back a little bit and just talk about the basics, which is hard for me to do in terms of I love a good theme, but I do try.
Also, I think that gives a really kind of good overview of the ceremonies and things. I think from when cybersecurity teams see all these ceremonies going on, one they're like, how come I'm not invited, which we'll go on to a minute. Yeah. But I think one of the other things that they're a bit worried about when it comes to things like the Agile manifesto in particular, I know I hear this a lot, is I know one of the key things of the Agile manifesto is working product over comprehensive documentation. Now, documentation, when you're in a risk function like cybersecurity, yeah, is a really big deal. What would you say to alleviate concerns about that part of the Agile manifesto for a cybersecurity audience?
So, like the Scrum Guide, like the 12 principles, like, you know, manifesto. I do agree with what obviously is said, but this is all, I suppose, guidance. It can't always be taken as gospel. You have to flex it, tweak it, and make it suit your squad's needs. I'd say, you know, you can never be away with documentation. Even we have documentation, but it's a way to suit your team and the needs of that team.
Yeah. So I had it, somebody described it as, when people say over, they think people mean instead of, and that's not the case.
Exactly.
You need necessary. We use, my old company used to say necessary and sufficient, which is an awfully stuffy term. It just means enough documentation, because nobody's going to be reading a 90-page document. No. I don't know what we used to have, like the old-fashioned requirements docs that were 90, 100, 200 pages long in some cases. Nobody's going to read them. And it's like, well, what's your viable, minimum viable documentation to get the job done safely? I guess the other aspect of working in the Scrum team is obviously trying to minimize blockers. You know, the daily Scrum is quite often one of the things is mentioning, you know, what you one of the things is what's blocking you. And I guess, how do you find working with a team that has the potential to block you and works at a different cadence entirely?
Yeah, definitely cyber, NFT, back-end teams, anything, you know, you always have, it's never just completely, what you do is never completely just in your squad. You will always have external dependencies, things you need to consider. It's having a secure software development lifecycle. That's kind of that thinking, really. So for me, the key thing, I suppose, if we focus on cyber, is basically it's making sure that these kind of external dependencies, teams, things you need to think about are thought about at the beginning of a process rather than later on down the line. I feel, if I can focus on cybersecurity for this podcast, is that sometimes I feel that cybersecurity isn't considered at the beginning of a project and it's more of an afterthought. And really, it shouldn't be. It should be about teaching people to securely code, for example. So when it comes to code scanning or pen tests, we have, I'll say, not no, but little vulnerabilities.
I don't think there's anyone that has none.
Yeah. No, nothing has a day room.
I would actually be like, I would actually probably say to that pen testing company, can you do that again?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, you need that time for example, it's scheduling a pen test in advance. So a lot of the time in terms of considering another team or that can block your work in a different cadence is actually going a bit back to some admin, really, and just thinking, right, these are the dates. This is what we need to consider. These are the people I need. Obviously, a big part of being a Scrum Master is bringing people together. You might not always be the person doing the doing, but you bring people together. You facilitate that conversation and process and ways of working and vibe. So it's for me, it's scheduling teams such as cyber in advance. You have that remediation period and you can have time to sort out any risks or vulnerabilities that may appear in that pen test report, for example. It's that awareness piece. That's what I think it comes down to. It's not being naive to the fact that a team can just pick up something in a couple of weeks, because really sometimes you need to schedule these things in a few weeks in advance, really. I think for everything in terms of like considering external teams or people that have a different cadence is just that awareness on scheduling things in advance, communicating with them. And I may be saying really simple things here, but sometimes we forget about the simple things.
Oh yeah.
You know, especially we've got a world of team Slack. It is going back to the basics and thinking, who do I need to contact? When do I need to contact this person? So yeah, that they can help me with, if I involve them in the beginning of this project, they can actually have the time to help me with code scanning, checking our repos. You know, it's not going to be a rush for them or a rush for me.
Do you think maybe teams would benefit from actually thinking about the whole collaboration piece? And actually, you mentioned there, so a couple of, I guess what we call nowadays shift left security, and actually engaging people as early as possible, but also engaging people in maybe non-technical terms as well. So a lot of people like to nerd out about firewalls and port scanning and stuff, but actually I guess security is much more than that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, obviously, I know it's the cyber security, like you said, there's security around networks, applications, operational side, you know, protecting data. And even, I think the biggest thing is risk. So thinking about like the vulnerabilities in our systems, applications, making our products better. And I think, yeah, there's definitely there's a time for proper technical jargon and there's a time for bringing it back to basics. And I think the biggest thing we need with teams such as cyber is the cheerleaders or the champions, basically, you know. And you can do this on a voluntary basis, you know, through talking to you guys, talking to people at my company. There's an interest in it, and just people want each other to support each other. We're all working to the same goal, so it's actually championing each other, technically and non-technically, championing the teams, what they do, seeing how it can fit in your kind of ways of working, processes, team ethos and vibes. It's that kind of education piece, really.
Yeah, interesting you mentioned there integrating with team, sort of the processes and things. I guess, do you think security teams could use a Scrum Master or maybe move towards Kanban or something? I know that you don't work in cybersecurity, so it might be a slightly abstract question.
Yeah, so I definitely know security people who their kind of structure. And I suppose I know having a Scrum Master isn't a typical thing in security teams. I know you have projects that you may be working on in an agile way, but you may not deliver the work like we do in the more technical side, that the cadence, structure, format that we do. I think what I've seen is like there's certain like team leads, for example, that could also be a potential Scrum Master. The foundation of what those roles do could help in guiding people, helping, you know, put pieces together. So I think it really depends. I haven't seen or heard of many like cyber teams with a Scrum Master. It's more of a team lead or a subject matter expert. I think it'd be a great trial to see in some companies, but I haven't seen it myself. But I don't see it ever being a bad thing. Obviously, you don't want too many cooks in the kitchen kind of thing. So you'd have to work out your structure and find a way to work maybe differently or together. But yeah, I think it'd be an interesting kind of little experiment to see, actually. I know people, even, you know, tech teams and cyber, both can use Jira, for example, to organize their work on a Kanban structure. So that kind of, you could say, could a Scrum Master help with that? But there's definitely things that could be done. There's always ways of working and facilitation, like I said, bringing those pieces together that could be something to look at.
I think as an ex-dev, you know, that's how I got my start before I got into cybersecurity. I have borrowed some of learnings from being in that world, working in 2-week sprints, so do work in a Kanban style where we can. One thing that I do really love doing is retros.
Yeah.
But it's not the retros in terms of a 2-week sprint. What I do is I get the team together and we do retros on the month.
Nice.
So
yeah.
The way we work, it's too long term in some cases. You know, if we are lucky enough to be brought in at the start, you know, then usually our deliverables are towards the end of the project. So we're just doing all the stuff in the background. So there's not really much to comment on. But if during a month we have delivered something, you know, we'll all get together and we'll do a retro and we'll discuss not necessarily the work itself, but how we got to that output. And I think that's the crucial thing, is to how do you make your processes better? So if, for example, maybe we were causing a blocker on one end, let's figure out actually where is our bottleneck there and how do we make that better for next month? It's not necessarily about the actual piece of work itself. It's about that process, and if we can make that process better, then next month will be a lot easier for us and we can keep iterating on making those processes, our interactions, our communication better. And hopefully, you know, as the months tick on and go by, we get better and better, and then we can focus on something else and get better that way. And I think retros are a really good way of, one, celebrating the wins, which I think is really underestimated, and it's really great opportunity to get together and pat people on the back and say you did really well there. It's a nice little whinge in a way, in a constructive way, yeah, in a safe space. But then it's a really good thing of going, actually, I've got a great idea. Can we try this? And I think that's where cybersecurity could really use the principles of Scrum and Agile to an ability they probably haven't even thought of doing so just yet. Again, just from experience, when I've worked with other cybersecurity teams, a lot of them do see it as like, what is that? What is this alchemy of 2-week sprints? And why yeah, do they keep having these meetings and things like that? And yeah, quite frankly, a lot of our work doesn't fit into a 2-week sprint. But I think it's so incredibly important for cybersecurity teams to know that quite a lot of the business does work in 2-week sprints. And you were touching upon earlier about that piece of admin. And I think that's maybe probably the biggest stumbling block between cybersecurity and other teams working in 2-week sprints, for example, is the admin piece. Is, you know, if that ticket of booking a pen test doesn't come early enough,
yes,
then you're snookered, because most places I've ever worked, it's 6 to 8 weeks to book in a pen test. And to get to get that ticket in like 2 weeks before. And, oh, we need a pen test doing. We need to go live on this day. Oh, wait. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to do that for you.
One of the things I found really useful, just in general, thinking in the kind of, not necessarily strictly Scrum, but in the agile way. And teams go, well, something won't fit in a 2 week sprint. And I had this with a big government project. It's like, it was a, something like a four sprint thing. You haven't broken it down enough. How do you measure? How do you actually track something that lasts for 8, 10, 12 weeks? And the answer is you can't. And then you get towards the end and go, oh yeah, we're nowhere near. And it's like what I like about it, the approach, is kind of a no surprises end game. Can you tell us more, a little bit about these, or the empiricism in Scrum, which I quite like as a term?
For me, it's using what you observe, what you've experimented with, to make those processes better, you know, have that continuous improvement. And I think of it, I say this a lot to my team, it's a trial and error kind of mindset. You know, sometimes you don't know unless you just give it a go. You see the results, whether it's numerical, so qualitative or quantitative, you'll see something, you'll get something back no matter what you do, whether it's a small kind of trial and error, I'm going to say experiment, and you use what you've seen to make things better or to avoid things that maybe haven't worked. That is what I feel and what I see empiricism as, and for, in terms of, like, you know, teams.
Somebody once said to me, if you're not keeping score, you're just practicing. And I quite like that term. And this is one thing I do value in teams that are doing agile really well, is people think agile is, I guess, I imagine you've had this before. People go, agile, that means you just do stuff and it's random. And actually there's more structure around agile, in my opinion, at least, than there is around more traditional waterfall projects.
Definitely. There is, but you've mentioned obviously waterfall, there's that continuous review where you don't have that, or you may not have that in waterfall. And I think it's a way of just taking a step back and thinking about this piece A before you go into piece B, without just thinking, let's just get the next step and we'll review everything at the end. It's actually, let's just take a step back, have a think, what can we do better? And also getting the right people in the room. Like I said, especially as a Scrum Master, it's not always you who is doing the doing, but it's making sure you've got these fantastic, talented, skilled people, and seeing what they can do, inspiring them to come up with ideas and solutions to potential problems. It's that kind of review and autonomy that makes things so much better, I think, in Agile. And like I said, it's all just a guide. You have to flex it a bit.
Absolutely. What do you wish the cybersecurity teams would do to make your lives easier?
Good question. So personally, in my experience, I've only had a good experience with the cybersecurity teams.
That's very good to hear. I'm sure your organisation would be very happy to hear that.
I honestly have, hand on my heart. And I think you asked what they can do. I actually think it's a two-way thing. It's not one or the other. We both have to, as cheesy as it sounds, work together. But you do. And I think I'll go back to, it's the scheduling, the communication. That is what the tech team, Scrum Master, cyber teams, everyone's responsible for it. So I wouldn't say it's one or the other. It's that working together and doing that together that will make both of your lives easier.
I think there's a lot to say about, like, transparency when it comes to scheduling as well, and not reinventing the wheel every time. So things like, you know, security non-functional requirements. I don't love a massive spreadsheet, I'll be honest with you. And, you know, Jeff and I have been working on educating people about creating abuse cases and misuse cases, which is a take on user stories, to make those a lot more palatable. I'll put a link in the show notes to a talk we've done on that for our listeners, if they're interested in that sort of thing. So there's that sort of element as well, of just like a checkbox, a checklist, being able to say, okay, so if you're starting something new, this is what we'll probably ask for you eventually. Think about this in terms of your sprints. Like, this would be good to have early planning stages. This could be later on in the project and things like that. And then maybe have a second kind of flow of, like, okay, you're in the process now. Maybe it's a product that, you know, has been going for a while. If something changes, like if this changes and there's not any real security changes, probably don't need to engage us. But if there is, this is the process. And just having it a bit more transparent about who does what when, rather than going, oh, we'll probably talk about security, and security going, either you've come to us too late, or them turning around going, oh, you didn't need to come to us. And again, it's all those unnecessary conversations that I think we could all do better about really reducing if we were just a little bit more transparent with each other.
Definitely. And that kind of, that comes back to the the three pillars of Scrum. If I go back to that one you said about transparency, so we've got transparency, inspection and adaptation. And I think it's very agile and cybersecurity both can benefit from that. Transparency is, as you said, you know, making things visible in terms of communication, the time of which that takes place. I think making processes, documentation, requests visible and understandable to everybody. Like we talked to, going back to the technical, non-technical side of things, that transparency is really important. Inspection in terms of going back to frequently reviewing things and making sure that people can identify issues quickly and the people involved can come together quickly. And then adaptation in terms of having that mindset and ability to adjust things when required in both processes, timescales, etc. I think that kind of goes really well with cyber and agile. I think it kind of goes hand in hand. And I think cyber has like three pillars as well, like people, process and technology. So I know, you know, there's a lot of similarities really that we can kind of bring together and work together.
What do you think then is the biggest misunderstanding about your role? From a cybersecurity perspective, what do you think people in cybersecurity assume you do and what your role is supposed to be?
It's a really good question, because I think it's not just cyber. I think it's, unless you're in this world.
Feel free to name and shame some of the departments. One of the nice things about this podcast has been is other people going, well, yeah, you're saying people don't like cybersecurity, but oh God, the people in finance.
Well,
they're a nightmare. The people in marketing, oh man, you haven't seen nothing yet.
But I think it is definitely, I think I'll say unknown rather than misunderstanding. And it really depends on the area that you're in or the industry, or the kind of network events, sessions, things that you're into that you know about the world of Agile. So I think sometimes I've heard that like Scrum Masters are project managers or team leaders or managers, which were not managers of people. Like I go back to the being that guidance to those in your team, and definitely not a project manager. I use a spreadsheet when I really need to. I know I'm generalizing there. I don't want to have, you know, plans upon plans. I'm very much into, you know, forecasting, and where we are involved in supporting delivery, but I think we are not the project managers, the managers of the team members. I kind of think of us as that like guiding star, but the star being those in the squad, not the scrum master. We're the guiding star, but they're the real stars. I always call my squad the wizards, because they're just incredibly talented and just amazing, and I'm like, you guys inspire me. So that's what I think the misunderstanding is really for. Yeah, project management, team leader, manager. And we're not.
Yeah, I guess from a point of view, obviously your team need to be aware of cybersecurity practice. And it's really nice to hear the volunteer, the term secure software delivery lifecycle. I mean, people weren't really talking about that so much 5 or 10 years ago. How do you or maybe your team ensure that they are up to speed with the latest cybersecurity practices?
Not going to lie, there's work to do. Like I said, there's a process in terms of when we interact with teams such as cyber. For us, we've had probably minimal involvement in like, you know, beginning of projects, but it's obviously the thing that we want to encourage is to have that continuous involvement. Definitely say it's not perfect and we've got work to do. So I think it's really going back to the education piece and being that champion, whether having that champion in your team, like you have accessibility champions, for example, people who lead initiatives. I think that's what we need more for cyber, teams like cyber, NFT, stuff like that. I think we need more of the champion side to, you know, see where do they fit in requirement analysis, design or implementation, testing. It goes back to the education piece again. Where do we need to kind of come together on? Do we need to do, I know I can say my company have started doing like road shows, for example. And that's been really good because different companies can have so many departments, be so vast. You sometimes don't know every department, but there's really crucial departments that we should know, such as cyber. So it's making that awareness, moving across sites, saying, how can you help me understand and how can I help others understand?
Do you think that maybe actually they could take a little bit of your sentiment from the beginning and try and put themselves out of at least a bit of their own jobs?
Yeah, maybe.
They don't need to be involved as much.
Yeah, definitely. It's you don't know what you don't know, right? It can help in terms of having that education piece, the visibility of what people do, of the processes, the ways of working will help people work together. And it kind of becomes like a joint role or a joint discipline that people don't really think about. It's like a second nature thing that, like, we think about Agile. That's what we can think about in terms of the cybersecurity ways of working and processes. It can get to that. We just need to make that effort to make it happen.
And I definitely think that's a combined effort as well. Cybersecurity teams, absolutely. It would be wonderful if they followed that. The aim is to put yourself out of a job mentality, because cybersecurity teams are often the most underfunded, under-resourced area of the business. You know, there's like a stat out there, is there's, you know, like one cybersecurity person for every 250 developers or something like that in an organization. That's like a well-established organization as well.
Luxury.
So there's not enough to go around. So there's no way that a cybersecurity team can keep their eyes on every single project, go to every single ceremony, every single sprint and things like that. So if they're able to make it so that people working in squads are able to make at least some of the cybersecurity decisions themselves, then that's only going to help everyone. So it cuts down on communication time, speeds up the process, helps with cybersecurity people focusing on things maybe that are a bit more imperative rather than the kind of nitty-gritty stuff that can just be solved maybe by a checklist like we discussed earlier. But I think the problem is with cybersecurity teams is that because they've traditionally had to say no to a lot of things, they're still in that kind of mindset. Because they've had to have oversight over so much, it's been quite self-preservationist to say no more often. And also because a lot of organisations traditionally don't get them involved in time, don't consult them. And so they feel like nobody cares about cybersecurity except me. And sometimes that can lead to a bit of a halo effect or a bit of a hero mentality. I know a lot of cybersecurity people think that they're the heroes of the organization and that only they can protect the organization from cybersecurity threats. I think that does cause a bit of a kind of disconnect. On the one hand, I'm sure loads of cybersecurity teams really want people to be more autonomous when it comes to this. And I think there's a lot that can be done about bridging that gap. One, making cybersecurity people aware that, you know, not everyone comes into work wanting to do a bad job, you know, write crappy code, crappy insecure code. And then the other side of it is people do care about security. Maybe they're not experts in it, but they do care. And I think that message needs to go out more.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I know, like, cybersecurity teams in my company, I know they would love that more involvement and engagement and understanding both ways from the squads, from themselves. There's definitely that need to learn more and understand more of what each other does. And like you said, no one goes in thinking, you know, I'm going to do a bad job today. You all want to do your best. So I definitely think it's a fine balance, isn't it? Like you said, and everything takes time, from learning the do's and don'ts of something to being comfortable, and for squad members to be comfortable, but also, as you said, for the cyber team to maybe get to a point where they can let go, because a lot of them are, it's overstretched departments, really. It's gonna take time, but I think with time and with patience, definitely we can do that.
I love the phrase. I think it's a really interesting one. I think obviously we spend a lot of our time at work, and I think some people think that work has to equal suffering, which is rather bleak view of the world. But you mentioned fun with purpose, and some teams take themselves very seriously, and it's fine because it is serious business in some ways. Like, the outcomes are serious, but it doesn't have to. How could we introduce a bit of fun with purpose into what is traditionally quite a serious team?
Whether it's, you know, squad, cyber, I think it's sometimes I feel it's like we become an adult and we forget how to just be fun and let ourselves go and have a bit of creativity. I generally think, and this is kind of what I do with my squad, and that what, you know, teams such as cyber can also benefit from, is going back to being a kid for a bit. You know, you have that concentration, that world you're in, and it's got purpose to you, you know, at that time when you're building like your Lego tower or whatever. And it's that kind of same mentality in terms of, we don't have to get a pen and paper out and write an essay to reflect on this or to work this out. It is literally going back to visuals. It's going back to play. It is really going back to being a kid and using play to express yourselves, your feelings, your thoughts and ideas. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I have pens and stickers and glitter and post-it notes and flip charts. And I get my squad to do the most random things, like make s'mores in the summer and you know, just be, it is literally all about play and just not taking ourselves too seriously. And just, I think a lot of it goes back to being visual as well. When someone's trying to have fun with purpose, no one wants to read like we said, a 90-page document. You want visuals. You want to be able to kind of imprint something into your mind, into your memory. And I think that's what people can do in terms of the visual tools and the play mentality. I think that's what all teams can benefit from. And as long as you have some output to show for it, if we talk about retros and, you know, needing a retro JIRA ticket, you don't. The guys have got a Miro board. They can reflect on that. You can go back to it. It doesn't always have to be so formal. There will always be output and value in what you do because you've had the session, you've had that discussion. Like-minded people in this world of tech, there will always be value in what you've done. Just have fun with it.
Amazing. So what would you suggest for any cybersecurity people listening? What is their first fun with purpose activity they should try?
Okay, coming up to Christmas, let's go with a Christmas theme. Yep. I would say make your office or team area into a grotto. have a Santa, to a voluntary Santa out there, to collate and distribute team wins and celebrate them and cheerlead them. And also, one thing that I would do with my squad, make an advent calendar. Doesn't have to have all the exact numbers, and put in goals of each of your team members and review it the next year. Take that advent calendar out in 2024, December 2024, if you do it now, and reflect on what your year has been like.
Kind of like a time capsule, but a Christmas time capsule.
Yeah.
I like that idea. We don't do that very often. Like, we do, you know, retrospectives, I think, are great. Leanne, one member of your team, is an absolute retro expert. Obviously, you are as well, before getting in trouble. But we sometimes don't like think about, like, actually have a look at the overall year. Like, a year is a, you know, because it's a human meaningful measure of time, and go, what have we achieved this year?
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, you can break it down. Like, we have quarterly kickoffs. We'll be doing, you know, quarterly retros, like you've mentioned, Leanne. And it's, but then it's definitely that end of year feeling that you get, and you, it's not making a New Year's resolution or anything like that. It's actually, how was my year? What, you know, like you said, Jeff, what did I do? A year is a long time, but there's definitely, you'll have, you know, even if you look in your phone, look at the pictures, the memories and things like that. It's looking back at the good times, personal, work, because yeah, you spend so much time at work. Make it worthwhile. Get those connections, have those relationships with people.
A great sentiment to end on. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's been a fantastic discussion.
Thank you for having me, and just a massive shout out to my squad, Pool Noodles. They're fantastic people there.
Pool Noodles.
Pool Noodles. We're all noodles. Amazing.
Well, if people want to find you, get in touch with you, how can they do that?
They can do that on LinkedIn. So I'm Amy Coopers on LinkedIn. I can send over the link for the show notes. And yeah, that's me. Thank you for having me so much. Thank you, Leanne and Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you. I really love this chat. It's always so lovely talking to someone who loves what they do and their team. And also props to the cyber team at Sky. Sounds like they're a really good bunch.
Yeah, I'm glad we did this episode. There's a lot of misconceptions about Scrum and Agile. I mean, a lot of it's due to companies either doing a bastardized version of it or just doing it badly. But when it's done right, the results are there and they speak for themselves. It's not only a productive way to work, but under the guidance of a good Scrum Master like Amy, it's also good for creativity and well-being.
I wish Amy was my Scrum Master just for retros and that great fun with purpose idea that she had. Remind me at the end of November, Jeff, to release a short version of that Christmas retro idea so we can all remember about doing it.
Shall I write you a JIRA ticket for it?
Nice. Pop it on the backlog. I'd also love to hear from our listeners if this dispelled any myths about Agile for them, and if they've had any success implementing Agile's ways of working in their team. Do drop us a message on our LinkedIn. We'd love to hear about it.
Links to everything Amy discussed in this episode can be found in the show notes. And if you like the show, please do leave us a review and share on LinkedIn or in your teams. It really helps us spread the word and get high quality guests like Amy on future episodes.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. See you next time. Keep secure, and don't forget to ask yourself, am I the compromising position here?